This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Last week, the Justice Department released a report on its use of the Patriot Act, and Attorney General John Ashcroft testified at a House Judiciary Committee hearing. Ashcroft dismissed criticism of the detainment of immigrants after September 11th and asked Congress for increased powers to protect the homeland. Yesterday, Peace Watch spoke with Gerald Nadler, a U.S. congressman from New York and a member of the House Judiciary Committee. We asked Nadler if he was satisfied with the report and Ashcroft's testimony.
I was very disturbed by the report and by Attorney General Ashcroft's testimony, and not only as regards the Patriot Act. The report said that, well, we knew that about 1,200 people had been arrested in the sweep after September 11th, and the report said that I think only a handful, I think it said 11, were charged with any anything to do with terrorism. The others were just rounded up in a sweep, that they were held without without evidence, that, in fact, they were held for long periods of time in violation of the law, in fact, that they had a policy of hold until cleared. That is to say, you're presumed guilty until you're proven innocent, and the people were held for 80, 90, 120 days until the FBI could look up the records and clear them. The FBI was supposed to do it within a very short period of time, but took 2-3 months on many occasions. Many of them were maltreated while in jail, and all of this for no good reason at all, no probable cause. They were just seized. There was a policy against even admitting who was or naming the people who were in jail. All of this very destructive to civil liberties, very tyrannical toward the people seized, and some of it illegal.
So does the innocent until proven guilty, does that not apply to people in this
situation? Well, it certainly didn't apply in these people's cases. I mean, as a practical matter, it didn't apply. If you can hold people until the FBI clears them, normally the law says you've got to release them, I think, in 72 hours. So that was number one. Number two, even aside from the Patriot Act, I was particularly disturbed by Attorney General Ashcroft's answer to a question that I asked him, and I wasn't able to follow up. You know, and that's this business of the so-called enemy combatants, the Padilla case and the Hamdi case. In the Padilla case, they arrested this man, Mr. Padilla, at O'Hare Airport on American territory, an American citizen. And they claim the right to hold him indefinitely, forever, without him having access to an attorney, without any due process, without any hearing. As long as the war against terrorism goes on, they can hold him as an unlawful combatant because the president says he's an unlawful combatant. And the brief the Justice Department submitted to the court said that under the president's war powers, that if he designates someone as an enemy combatant, the courts have no jurisdiction to even question that. So if he can pick under this doctrine, the president can say that you or I or any other American is an enemy combatant, and we can be thrown in jail forever with no right to a lawyer, no right to a hearing, no right to habeas corpus, no right to anything.
Well, what would qualify a person as a quote-unquote enemy combatant or unlawful?
Say so.
Alone.
Alone. Realistically, they say so someone in the bureaucracy. The president isn't going and picking out people, obviously. But that's the point. Now, maybe someone is an enemy combatant. Maybe his brother-in-law is the enemy combatant. Well, maybe someone with a similar name. You can't, according to the Justice Department, you can't even question the designation in court. Now, nobody in an English-speaking jurisdiction, with the possible exception of the South Africans during the apartheid era, has made such a claim of untrammeled power since before Magna Carta, 800 years ago. We rebelled against George III for much less than that. And when I asked him that question, I said, in other words, you can pick up anybody. It's one thing to pick up someone in Afghanistan with a rifle in his hands in a combat zone and say he's an enemy combatant. It's another thing to say, to give the president the power to pick up anybody in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And his reply was, quote, you know, the last time I looked at September 11th, an American street was a war zone. There was a street in Virginia that was a war zone. There were streets in New York that were war zones, unquote. In other words, so what? The president should have this untrammeled power.
And what kind of mood was there amongst your congressional colleagues towards this?
Well, some of the Republicans seemed disturbed. Some of them seemed perfectly happy. Most of the Democrats were not happy with that.
And so what kind of follow-up will there be?
I don't know. Now, this is being challenged in court, in two courts. Judge Mukasey in the New York federal court a couple of weeks ago partially rebuffed the Justice Department and partially upheld them. He said, no, that Mr. Padilla was at least entitled to a lawyer. Mm-hmm. He couldn't simply keep it out of court. But then he said, and this is now on appeal from both sides, he said that the moment the president said, you're an enemy combatant, all they needed to back that up was, quote, some evidence, unquote. The normal standard for holding someone in jail is probable cause to believe that he committed a crime or is about to commit a crime.
And so,
some evidence means anything.
Mm-hmm.
It means an informant, an unreliable informant told an FBI agent, or your jilted boyfriend told the FBI agent that you're an enemy combatant. And that's it. That's some evidence. You don't have to have an opportunity to refute it or anything. That's it.
Congressman Nadler, so Attorney General John Ashcroft was before the Judiciary Committee last week seeking to expand the powers of the Patriot Act.
Legislation, yes.
And so yesterday's Washington Post had an article about the possibility that Karl Rove was involved in the tracking of the Texas Democrats' plane.
Uh-huh.
You recall the incident where the Texas Democrats were left the city,
the state,
in order to avoid having to vote.
Avoid a quorum in the Texas House of Representatives so that they wouldn't have to pass a reapportionment bill.
What's your response to this? Is that appropriate use of that?
No, it is certainly not appropriate, and I don't. Even the Republicans don't say it's appropriate. The defense is that, well, we didn't realize that this was what was going on. We got a request from the Texas state officials. We, the Department of Homeland Security, got a request from the Texas state officials to track this plane, and we thought that they were concerned that the plane was in trouble and might have mechanical difficulties or some such. We certainly had no idea that this had a political motive, but so they say. That's their excuse.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, an agency of the United States government was used deliberately to try to interfere in a political dispute, in other words, if the people in the federal government who were tracking the plane knew, or if the people who ordered them to track the plane knew, or if the president or his advisors had anything to do with using the Department of Homeland Security to track that plane in order to help their local Texas Republican politicians, then heads should roll. That's a misuse of government power to subvert the operations of government. That's grounds for impeachment.
Mm. Congressman Nadler, thank you so much for your time and your perspective. Any final thoughts on your part?
Well, yeah, just one thought. We're engaged in a war now against this terrorism. That war may go on for God knows how long. And the United States has a history during many, not all, but many of our wars, going from the Alien and Sedition Acts in 1798 to the internment of Japanese American citizens in World War II to the FBI's COINTELPRO operations against Vietnam War opponents and a lot of things in between. We have a history of trampling on civil liberties during wartime in the name of national security. 20 years later, the historians write it didn't help national security, and we apologize. We shouldn't repeat that, and we are repeating it right now.
U.S. Congressman Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York. The alleged misuse of data for purposes of national security threatens the civil liberties enjoyed by those living here in the U.S., and the Bush administration is finding it hard to make certain questions go away. Take, for example, Saddam Hussein's supposed weapons of mass destruction. According to recent reports, since the end of the military phase of the Iraq invasion, coalition forces have visited more than 300 suspected sites of weapons of mass destruction. So far, no weapons have been found. Prior to the invasion, President Bush made a number of sweeping statements insisting Saddam Hussein possessed chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, leading the U.S. to a preemptive strike. The White House has since modified those statements, according to the Washington Post. Just yesterday, the president said, quote, I am absolutely convinced with time we'll find out that they did have a weapons program, unquote.
According to John Dean, former counsel to President Richard Nixon and Thin Law columnist, the manipulation or deliberate misuse of national security intelligence data, if proven, could be a high crime under the Constitution's impeachment clause. Earlier today, he discussed Bush's credibility and the possibility of impeachment on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman.
I was very curious to know if indeed the intelligence agencies of the federal government have been somehow misused or abused to get the conclusion that there were weapons of mass destruction. We don't know the answer to that, and I make that very clear. I don't know the answer to that, but what I am raising is, what is the problem if indeed there has been a manipulation of intelligence? And if there has, we have everything from the possibility of a criminal offense, because it can be a conspiracy to defraud the government, something else that's a lasting lesson of Watergate, and it could be an impeachable offense. Now, there's no such thing as the law of impeachment. There really is only the political practice, but I'm just saying that this would certainly come within the parameters of a high crime and misdemeanor to bring a nation to war based on false information.
What is the information, as you understand it, about weapons of mass destruction, what the Bush administration, what President Bush himself said along the way, and why that matters?
Well, very clearly, Mr. Bush has made countless statements. Rather than reciting them all, for example, in his radio address, I'll give you some of the declarative ones that stick in my memory. In his radio address back in October of last year, he said Iraq had stockpiled biological and chemical weapons, and that they were rebuilding their nuclear weapon facilities. And then shortly before he took the nation to war, he said that based on the intelligence that this country and other governments had, that there was just no doubt that the Iraq regime possessed and was actively concealing what he called the most lethal weapons ever devised.
So if Bush actually lied, and do you think he did, what should happen to him?
Well, I don't know if Bush lied. Lying is a matter of one's intent. It's an intentional falsehood. It does appear that some of his statements are false. Whether he knew they were false or not, I don't know the answer to that. There are some that of his supporters who are already starting to back off and say, well, we're not so sure there were weapons of mass destruction, even though we thought that was an awfully good possibility, and we think that Bush should back off a little bit. Well, he doesn't seem to be willing to do so, unless you take his declarative statements of earlier and now his statements that they had a program, which is a huge difference, as really basically a concession that he had made false statements. I don't think he's prepared to go that far. So I don't know that he's lied. I can't, that the evidence isn't all in yet. And the other thing is, the administration keeps saying that they are going to continue, and indeed I assume they will, because it's quite important they do so, to see if they can't find the weapons of mass destruction. So many people are saying, quite appropriately, we've got to wait and see what happens.
In the piece that you wrote, and you say there are two main possibilities. One, that something's wrong with the Bush White House's national security operations, and you say that's difficult to believe. The other is that the president has deliberately misled the nation and the world.
Those are two options, exactly. And we don't know what the answer to those questions are. The evidence is certainly strongly suggesting that Mr. Bush has made misrepresentations. He's taken us to war on a bogus premise, and that would be very unfortunate if he has.
And if he has, what should happen to him?
Well, if he has, I think, first of all, let's look at the big picture. If he's got bad intelligence and he says, well, listen, I only repeated what I was told, we're in trouble, because his entire preemptive foreign policy is based on knowing what other nations are doing and the desire to stop them from doing it before they do it. That really would shake to the roots his preemptive foreign policy and be a real reason for caution before anybody would pursue it. Let's say he's caught himself, somebody is able to put the lie to him with what other evidence that might surface. Then you've got a possibility of, one, did he manipulate an agency to do so. I don't know if he did or not. If he did not and just got bad intelligence, he can probably point the finger at somebody else. But from what I gather from my friends in Washington, a lot of those in the intelligence community are just not going to let him point the finger because they don't believe that's the case. They think that there was some manipulation. But the other thing is, this is a political question as well. Certainly if it ever were to go to impeachment, you've got to have a fairly hostile atmosphere before that will happen. We're a long way from that. But I think his credibility is going to be seriously damaged if indeed he's caught in a serious lie.
John Dean, is this, if he is caught in a serious lie, worse than Watergate?
Well, it depends upon what the lie is. Nixon was clearly caught in many lies. He lied about his role in Watergate and the cover-up, and he did it for a protracted period of time. We're very early right now. We don't know how this is all going to play out, and I don't have a crystal ball, and my tea leaves aren't that good, so I can't tell you what's going to happen. I just know that I think right now this president has a very serious credibility problem, and he might be well advised to call a blue ribbon panel in to look at the evidence and make its own independent conclusion as to whether he was justified in taking the position he was. It's more a question of that I'm raising is if he has manipulated the information, if he has misused and abused the processes of government, then he's got a problem. You know, I think we're all aware that presidents are often less than candid, particularly in the national security area. If he has manipulated the information to persuade the nation to go to war, that's a pretty serious potential offense.
Former counsel to President Richard Nixon, John Dean, speaking on Democracy Now! With host Amy Goodman. Major peace organizations in the U.S., which mobilized against the invasion of Iraq and the aggressive military agenda of the Bush administration, are coming together now in the aftermath of Iraq to strategize on how to proceed from here. Over the weekend, hundreds of peace and social justice activists from around the country gathered in Chicago for a historic conference to determine new directions for the American peace movement. United for Peace and Justice, the largest of several anti-war coalitions, held its first national conference from Friday through Sunday, where a steering committee was elected, a structure adopted, and a platform was composed, which confirms the coalition's commitment to more than just opposition to war. Damu Smith is founder and co-chair of the D.C.-based organization Black Voices for Peace and was one of the organizers of the conference.
Today, we are witnessing a true and historic maturation of the peace movement at this most critical and important moment in history. This is truly a movement that is coming of age in an age of great danger, incredible violence, uncertainty, oppression, and suffering for a majority of the people of this nation and the world. As we continue to journey through the infancy of this new millennium, we must pledge to lay the foundation for a new world century in the weeks and months to come. This will not be easy. There will be great challenges and difficult days and weeks and months ahead. But we know that this must be a century of peace grounded in justice for all people and all nations, and we must dedicate ourselves as we go to our planes and our cars and our trains and buses to this proposition that we will make this century truly a century of justice with peace. Our gathering this weekend is indeed historic, because we, the delegates who have come together, we've already made history. We've decided to merge our individual strengths, our individual talents, and our collective vision together into a oneness, into a togetherness that will be able to transform this society and this world into something else different from what those who are currently in power would have it to be. We are leaving this room today to wage a united and coordinated effort and to build a movement to reverse the dangerous anti-people, anti-worker, anti-women, anti-child, anti-youth, anti-earth, anti-gay, lesbian, transgender, anti-everything positive. All of these people who are in power right now, they must be removed from power. And we must be the ones to do that. So we have agreed. We have agreed this weekend, literally, politically, and figuratively, to connect the dots. We connected the dots, green dots, all kinds of dots. And so what we've agreed to do is we're going to confront the drive towards empire. We're going to mobilize against the occupations. We're going to address the important domestic, economic, human needs, civil liberties, and democratic rights issues. We have adopted a structure and an approach to structure that is inclusive, that is sensitive. And we have agreed upon a strategic framework, as has already been said. And in this process, we have tried to create space for everyone to participate. Our efforts this weekend have not been perfect. We did not have enough people of color here. We did not have enough youth here. We did not have enough of a number of people here. But we are on our way to correcting that because we've made some decisions this weekend that already lay the basis for that. We must make sure that our young people feel welcome in this process. And one of the things I think we must do is support any initiative to have a national youth Congress for Peace with Justice that we help organize. I also feel that it is going to be very important for us to strengthen the anti-racist aspects of what we are doing. We must not allow the Bush administration to get away and the Supreme Court to get away with defeating progressive and effective measures to ensure affirmative action and inclusion for all people in this society. As I've said many times, as long as there is affirmative racism and as long as there is affirmative sexism, we need affirmative action. So let us go back. Let us leave this place today and go back and organize. Let us organize in the churches. Let us organize in the mosques and the temples, in the high schools, on the college, universities, and the campuses, in the communities, in all of the places, the fraternities and the sororities, the community groups, the youth groups, the women's organizations, all of these places, we've got to do that. Let us know today that while this process has been imperfect, we have achieved so much with so many challenges this weekend that we know that we are going to be successful. And finally, I want to say this. We are facing right now, as I said earlier this weekend, the most dangerous regime ever assembled in the history of this nation. And it is our task to do everything to defeat it, including letting those spineless, no back, no fighting, weak-kneed chump Democrats. Listen to this. I understand that we're fighting Bushism. But Bushism is represented by Democrats who are in bed with Bush every night. And so, I'm not going to be afraid to go to a Democratic convention on my own if necessary. to let all of those Democrats know you sold us out on the war. You did not represent us. Don't take our vote for granted. You've got to be a candidate or get the hell out of office. No, we cannot be afraid. And I say to you today, to my brothers and sisters in this room, there's something beautiful happening here. Because all of us have united around some fundamental tenets around the issue of the Middle East and the Palestinian-Israeli war and conflict. I, for one, have come to understand how important it is for us to bring our Arab sisters and brothers, our Jewish sisters and brothers, our white sisters and brothers, our Latino and Arab and Asian Latino Native American sisters and brothers around this issue. I say this to you. We may have had some disagreements about a date, but we agree that the racist, illegal, brutal occupation of Palestine must end, and we must do it working together. We've got to do it together. Everybody, no matter what color, no matter your religion, no matter what age or gender, we've got to come together and bring this mother down. We've got to rise up with the people of this nation, the workers, the youth. Let's build this new century together. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Damu Smith, founder and co-chair of the D.C.-based organization Black Voices for Peace.
Just what it's for. Nobody gives us a rhyme or reason. Have one doubt, they call it treason. We're chicken feathers all the way out wonder. God damn it, I'm trying to make it real compared to what suck you to me.
Les McCann and Eddie Harris, compared to what? Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer today was Laurel Paget-Seekins. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Benta Berkman, Pete Weiss, Jim Bennett, and Al Hammett. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting their website at PacificaArchives.org. I'm Vern Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening. They really got to be some